fool. Did you not consider why your father carried it? Why he bided his time all these years, gathering his strength? He was to wield it, to seal the 3 word keys back into the gate, and send us home before he shut the gate forever. Us and the Dark King. The lock was forged for us, promised to us, and ye wasted it. Elena braced a hand on the earth to keep from swaying. My father bears the word keys? He had never so much as hinted. And the lock? She had thought it a mere weapon. A weapon he had refused to wield in this bloody war. They did not answer, their silence confirmation enough. A small broken noise came out of her throat. Elena breathed.
I'm sorry.
Their rage rattled her bones, threatened to stop her heart dead in her chest. The one of flame and light and ashes seemed to withhold, seemed to pause in her wrath. To remember. She had not seen or spoken to her mother since she had left her body to forge the lock. Since Rhiannon Crokken had helped Mala cast her very essence into it. The mass of its power contained within the small witch mirror disguised as a blue stone, to be unleashed only once. They had never told Elena why, never said it was anything more than a weapon that her father would one day desperately need to wield. The cost, her mother's mortal body. The life she had wanted for herself with Brannan and their children. It had been 10 years since then. 10 years. Her father had never stopped waiting for Mala to return, hoping he'd see her again. Just once.
I will not remember you,
Mala had said to them all, before she had given herself to the lock's forging. And yet there she was, pausing. As if she remembered.
Mother,
Elena whispered, a broken plea. Mala Lightbringer looked away from her. The one who saw all with wise, calm eyes said,
Unleash him. So we have been betrayed by these earth beasts. Let us return the favor. Unleash the Dark King from his coffin.
No,
Elena pleaded, rising from her knees.
Please, please tell me what I must do to atone, but please do not unleash him. I beg you.
He will rise again one day,
said the one of darkness and death.
He will awaken. You have wasted our lock on a fool's errand, when you could have solved all. Had you only the patience and wits to understand.
Then let him awaken,
Elena begged, her voice breaking.
Let someone else inherit this war, someone better prepared.
Coward, said the one with a voice of steel and shields and arrows. Coward to shove the burden to another.
Please, Elena said, I will give you anything. Anything, but not that.
As one, they looked to Gavin.
No.
But it was her mother who said,
We have waited this long to return home. We may wait a little longer. Watch over this place a little longer.
Not just gods. But beings of a higher, different existence, for whom time was fluid, and bodies were things to be shifted and molded, who could exist in multiple places, spread themselves wide like nets being thrown. They were as mighty and vast and eternal as a human was to a mayfly. They had not been born in this world, perhaps had become trapped here after wandering through a word gate, and they had struck some bargain with her father, with Mala, to at last send them home,
banishing Erewhon with them. And she had ruined it.
The one with three faces said, "We will wait, but there must be a price, and a promise."
"Name it," Elena said.
If they took Gavin, she'd follow. She was not the heir to her father's throne. It did not matter if she walked out of this mountain pass. She wasn't entirely certain she could bear to see him again. Not after her arrogance and pride and self-righteousness. Brannon had begged her to listen. To wait. She had instead stolen the lock from him and run with Gavin into the night, desperate to save these lands.
The one with three faces studied her. "Mala's bloodline shall bleed again to forge the lock anew. And you will lead them. A lamb to slaughter. To pay the price of this choice you made to waste its power here for this petty battle. You will show this future scion how to forge a new lock with Mala's gifts. How to then use it to wield the keys and send us home. Our original bargain still holds. We will take the Dark King with us. Tear him apart in our own world, where he will be but dust and memory. When we are gone, you will show this scion how to seal the gate behind us, the lock holding it intact eternally. By yielding every last drop of their life force. As your father was prepared to do, when the time was right."
"Please," Elena breathed.
The three-faced one said,
"Tell Brannon of the wildfire what occurred here. Tell him the price his bloodline shall one day pay. Tell him to ready for it."
She let the words, the damnation, sink in.
"I will,"
she whispered. But they were gone. There was only a lingering warmth, as if a beam of sunlight had brushed her cheek. Gavin lifted his head.
"What have you done?"
he asked again.
"What have you given them?"
"Did you not hear it?"
"Only you,"
he rasped, his face so horribly pale.
"No others."
She stared at the sarcophagus before them, its black stone rooted to the earth of the pass. Immovable. They would have to build something around it, to hide it, protect it. Elena said,
"The price will be paid. Later."
"Tell me."
His swollen, split lips could barely form the words. Since she had already damned herself, damned her bloodline, she figured there was nothing left to lose in lying. Not this one time. This last time.
"Erewhon will awaken again. One day. When the time comes, I will help those who must fight him."
His eyes were wary.
"Can you walk?"
she asked, extending a hand to help him rise. The rising sun cast the black mountains in gold and red. She had no doubt the valley behind was bathed in the latter. Gavin released his grip, the fingers still broken, from where it had rested on Damaris's hilt. But he did not take her offered hand. And he did not tell her what he'd detected while he touched the sword of truth. What lies he'd sensed and unraveled. They never spoke of them again. Moonrise at the Temple of Sandrian, the Stone Marshes. The Princess of Eelwe had been wandering the Stone Marshes for weeks, searching for answers to riddles posed 1,000 years ago. answers that might have saved her doomed kingdom. Keys and gates and locks, portals and pits and prophecies. That was what the princess murmured to herself in the weeks she'd been stalking through the marshes alone, hunting to keep herself alive, fighting the beasts of teeth and venom when necessary, reading the stars for entertainment. So when the princess at last reached the temple, when she stood before the stone altar and the chest that was the light twin to the dark one beneath Morath, she at last appeared.
"You are Nehemia,"
she said. The princess whirled, her hunting leathers stained and damp, the gold tips on her braided hair clinking. An assessing look with eyes that were too old for barely 18, eyes that had stared long into the darkness between the stars and yearned to know its secrets. "And you are Elena." Elena nodded.
"Why have you come?"
The Princess of Ilwe jerked her elegant chin toward the stone chest. "Am I not called to open it? To learn how to save us? And to pay the price?"
"No,"
Elena said quietly.
"Not you. Not in this way."
A tightening of her lips was the only sign of the princess's displeasure.
"Then in what way, lady, am I required to bleed?"
She had been watching and waiting and paying for her choices for so long. Too long. And now that darkness had fallen, now a new sun would rise. Must rise.
"It is Mala's bloodline that will pay, not your own."
Her back stiffened.
"You have not answered my question."
Elena wished she could hold back the words, keep them locked up. But this was the price for her kingdom, her people. The price for these people, this kingdom, and others.
"In the north, two branches flow from Mala. One to the Havilyard House, where its prince with my mate's eyes possesses my raw magic and her brute power. The other branch flows through the Galathinius House, where it bred true, flame and embers and ashes."
"Aelin Galathinius is dead,"
Nehemia said.
"Not dead." "No,"
she'd ensured that, still paying for what she'd done that wintry night.
"Just hiding, forgotten by a world grateful to see such a power extinguished before it matured."
"Where is she? And how does this tie to me, lady?"
"You are versed in the history, in the players and the stakes. You know the word marks and how to wield them. You misread the riddles, thinking it was you who must come here to this place. This mirror is not the lock. It is a pool of memory, forged by myself, my father, and Rhiannon Crokken. Forged so the heir of this burden might understand one day. Know everything before deciding. This encounter, too, shall be held in it. But you were called so we might meet."
That wise young face waited.
"Go north, princess," Elena said. "Go into your enemy's household. Make the contacts, get the invitation. Do what you must. But get to your enemy's house. The two bloodlines will converge there. Already they are on their way."
"Aelin Galathinius is headed to Otterlin?"
"Not Aelin. Not with that name, that crown. Know her by her eyes, turquoise with a core of gold. Know her by the mark on her brow, the bastard's mark, the mark of Brannan. Guide her. Help her. She will need you."
And the price?
Elena hated them then. Hated the gods who had demanded this. Hated herself. Hated that this was asked, all these bright lights.
You will not see Ilwe again.
The princess stared at the stars as if they spoke to her, as if the answer were written there.
Will my people survive?
A small, quiet voice.
I don't know.
Then I will take the steps for that, too. Unite the rebels while I am in Rifthold. Ready the continent for war. Nehemia lowered her eyes from the stars. Elena wanted to fall to her knees before the young princess. Beg her forgiveness.
One of them must be ready. To do what needs to be done,
Elena said. If only because it was the sole way to explain. To apologize. Nehemia swallowed.
Then I shall help in whatever way I can.
For Irelia. And my people. Chapter 66 Adian Ashriver had been trained to kill men and hold a line in battle since he was old enough to lift a sword. Crown Prince Roe Galathinius had begun his training personally, holding Adian to standards that some might have deemed unfair, too unyielding for a boy. But Roe had known, Adian realized, as he stood on the prow of the ship, Ansel of Briarcliff's men armed and ready behind him. Roe had known even then that Adian would serve Aelin, and when foreign armies challenged the might of the Firebringer, it might not be mere mortals that he faced. Roe, Evelyn, had gambled that the immortal army now stretching away before him would one day come to these shores, and they had wanted to ensure that Adian was ready when it did.
"Shields up!" Adian ordered the men, as the second volley of arrows rained from Maeve's armada. The magical cloak around their ships was holding well enough, thanks to Dorian Havilyard. And though he was glad for any bloodshed it spared them, after the bullshit the king had pulled with Aelin and Manon, Adian gritted his teeth at each ripple of color upon impact.
"These are soldiers, the same as you," Adian went on. "Don't let the pointy ears deceive you. They bleed like the rest of us, and can die from the same wounds, too."
He didn't let himself glance behind, to where his father commanded and shielded another line of ships. Gavriel had kept quiet while Fenris divulged how to keep a quick-healing Fey warrior down. Go for slicing through muscles rather than stabbing wounds. Snap a tendon, and you'll halt an immortal long enough to kill. Easier said than done. The soldiers had gone pale-faced at the thought of it. Open combat, blade to blade, against Fey warriors. Rightly so. But Adian's duty wasn't to remind them of the blunt facts. His duty was to make them willing to die, to make this fight seem utterly necessary. Fear could break a line faster than any enemy charge. Roe, his real father, had taught him that. And Adian had learned it during those years in the north. Learned it fighting knee-deep in mud and gore with the Bane. He wished they flanked him, not unknown soldiers from the wastes. But he would not let his own fear erode his resolve. Maeve's second volley rose up, 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 the arrows soaring faster and farther than those from mortal bows, with better aim. The invisible shield above them rippled with flickers of blue and purple as arrows hissed and slid off it. Buckling already, because those arrows came tipped with magic. The soldiers on the deck stirred, shields shifting, their anticipation and rising terror coating Adian's senses.
"Just a bit of rain, boys," he said, grinning widely.
I thought you bastards were used to it out in the wastes.
Some grumbles, but those metal shields stopped shivering. Adian made himself chuckle, made himself the wolf of the north, eager to spill blood upon the southern seas. As Ro had taught him, as Ro had prepared him, long before Terrasen fell to the shadow of Otterlin. Not again. Never again, and certainly not to Maeve. Certainly not here with no one to witness it. Ahead, at the front lines, Rowan's magic flared white in silent signal.
"Arrows at the ready,"
Adian ordered. Bows groaned, arrows pointing skyward. Another flash.
"Volley!"
Adian bellowed. The world darkened beneath their arrows as they sailed toward Maeve's armada. A storm of arrows, to distract from the real attack beneath the waves. The water was dimmer here, the sunlit slim shafts that slid between the fat-bellied boats amassed above the waves. Other creatures had gathered at the ruckus. Flesh shredders looking for the meals that would surely come when the two armadas at last met. A flash of light had sent Lysandra diving deep, weaving between the circling scavengers, blending into their masses as best she could, while she launched into a sprint. She had modified her sea dragon, given it longer limbs, with prehensile thumbs, given her tail more strength, more control. Her own little project, during the long days of travel, to take one original form and perfect it, to alter what the gods had made to her own liking. Lysandra reached the first ship Rowan had marked, a careful, precise map of where and how to strike. A snap of her tail had the rudder in pieces. Their shouts reached her even under the waves, but Lysandra was already flying, soaring for the next marked boat. She used her claws this time, grabbing the rudder and ripping it clean off, then bashing a hole in the keel with her clubbed tail. Clubbed, not spiked. No, the spikes had gotten stuck in Skull's Bay, so she'd made her tail into a battering ram. Arrows fired with better accuracy than the Volg foot soldiers, shooting like those rays of sunshine into the water. She'd prepared for that, too. They bounced off scales of spider silk. Hours spent studying the material grafted onto Abraxos's wings had taught her about it. How to change her own skin into the impenetrable fiber. Lysandra tore into another rudder, then another, and another. Fae soldiers were screaming in advance of her, but the harpoons they fired were too heavy, and she was too fast, dove too deep and too swift. Whips of water magic speared for her, trying to ensnare her. She outswam them, too. The court that could change the world, she told herself over and over, as exhaustion weighed her down, as she kept disabling rudder after rudder, punching holes in those selected fae ships. She had made a promise to that court, that future, to Adian, and to her queen. She would not fail her. And if God's damned Maeve wanted to go head-to-head with them, if Maeve thought to strike them when they were weakest, Lysandra was going to make the bitch regret it. Dorian's magic roiled, as Maeve's armada went from firing arrows to outright chaos. But he kept his shields intact, patching the spots where arrows had broken through. Already his power wobbled, too swiftly drained. Either through some trick of Maeve's or whatever magic coated those arrows. But Dorian gritted his teeth, leashing his magic to his will, Rowan's bellowed warnings to hold echoing off the water, amplified in the way that Gavriel had used his voice in Skull's Bay. But even with the chaos of Maeve's armada finding their ships under siege from beneath the water, the lines of it stretched away forever. Aelin and Manon had not returned. A fae male in a raging, lethal panic was a terrifying thing to behold. Two of them were near cataclysmic. When Aelin and Manon had vanished into that mirror, Dorian suspected it was only Adian's roaring that had made Rowan snap out of the blood fury he'd descended into, and only the throbbing bruise on Dorian's cheek that made Rowan refrain from giving him a matching one. Dorian glanced toward the front lines, where the Fey Prince stood at the prow of his ship, his sword and hatchet out, a quiver of arrows and bows strapped across his back, various hunting knives honed razor sharp. The prince had not snapped out of it at all, he realized. No. Rowan had already descended to a level of icy wrath that had Dorian's magic trembling, even from the distance now between them. He could feel it. Rowan's power. Feel it as he'd sensed Aelin's surging up. Rowan had already been deep within his reservoir of power when Aelin and Manon had left. He'd used the last hour, once Adian had focused that fear and anger on the battle ahead, to plunge even deeper. It now flowed around them like the sea mere feet below. Dorian had followed suit, falling back on the training the prince had instilled in him. Ice coated his veins, his heart. Adian had said only one thing to him before departing for his own section of the Armada. The general prince had looked him over once, his Ash River eyes lingering on the bruise he'd given him, and said, "Fear is a death sentence. When you're out there, remember that we don't need to survive. Only put enough of a dent in them so that when she comes back, she'll wipe out the rest."
When?
Not if. But when Aelin found their bodies, or whatever was left of them if the sea didn't claim them, she might very well end the world for rage. Maybe she should. Maybe this world deserved it. Maybe Manon Blackbeak would help her do it. Maybe they'd rule over the ruins together. He wished he'd had more time to talk to the witch, to get to know her beyond what his body had already learned. Because even with the rudders being disabled, ships now advanced. Fey warriors, born and bred to kill. Adian and Rowan sent another volley of arrows aiming for the ships. Shields disintegrated them before they could meet any targets. This would not end well. His heart thundered, and he swallowed as the ships crept around their foundering brethren, inching toward that demarcation line. His magic writhed. He'd have to be careful where to aim, have to make it count. He did not trust his power to remain focused if he unleashed it all. And Rowan had told him not to. Had told him to wait until the Armada was truly upon them. Until they crossed that line. Until the Fey Prince gave the order to fire. For it was fire, and ice, that warred in Dorian now, begging for release. He kept his chin high as more ships inched toward those disabled at the front, then slipped alongside them. Dorian knew it would hurt. Knew it would hurt to wreck his magic, and then wreck his body. Knew it would hurt to see his companions go down one by one. Still, Rowan held the front line, did not let his ships turn to flee. Closer and closer, those enemy ships speared toward their front lines, hauled by waving limbs of mighty oars. Archers were poised to fire, and sunlight glinted off the burnished armor of the battle-hungry Fey warriors aboard, ready and rested, primed to slaughter. There would be no surrender. Maeve would destroy them just to punish Aelin. He'd failed them in sending Manon and Aelin away. On that gamble, he'd perhaps failed all of them. But Rowan Whitethorn had not. No. As those enemy ships slid into place among their foundering companions, Dorian saw that they each bore the same flag. A silver banner with a screaming hawk. And where Maeve's black flag of a perching owl had once flapped beside it. Now that black flag lowered. Now the Dark Queen's flag vanished entirely. As Fey ships bearing the silver banner of the House of Whitethorn opened fire upon their own armada. Chapter 67. Rowan had told Enda about Aelin. He had told his cousin about the woman he loved, the queen whose heart burned with wildfire. He had told Enda about Erewhon and the threat of the Keys and Maeve's own desire for them. And then he had gotten on his knees and begged his cousin to help. To not open fire on Terrasen's armada, but on Maeve's. To not squander this one chance at peace, at halting the darkness before it consumed them all, both from Morath and Maeve. To fight not for the queen who had enslaved him, but the one who had saved him.
"I will consider it,"
Endymion had said. And so Rowan had gotten off his knees and flown to another cousin's ship. Princess Selene, his youngest cunning-eyed cousin, had listened, had let him beg, and with a small smile she had said the same thing.
"I will consider it."
So he'd gone ship to ship, to the cousins he knew might listen. An act of treason, that was what he had begged them for. Treason and betrayal so great they could never go home. Their lands, their titles, would be seized or destroyed. And as their unharmed ships sailed into place beside those Lysandra had already disabled, as they opened an assault of arrows and magic upon their unsuspecting forces, Rowan roared at his own fleet,
"Now, now, now!"
Oars splashed into the waves, men grunting as they rowed like hell for the armada in utter chaos. Every single one of his cousins had attacked. Every single one. As if they had all met, all decided to risk ruination together. Rowan had not possessed an army of his own to give to Aelin, to give to Terrasen. So he had won an army for her, through the only things Aelin had claimed were all she wanted from him. His heart, his loyalty, his friendship. And Rowan wished his fire heart were there to see it, as the House of Whitethorn slammed into Maeve's fleet, and ice and wind exploded across the waves. Lorcan didn't believe it. He didn't believe what he was seeing as a third of Maeve's fleet opened fire upon the stunned majority of her ships. And he knew. He knew without having confirmed it that the banners flying on those ships would be silver. However he'd convinced them, whenever he'd convinced them, Whitethorn had done it. For her. All of it for Aelin. Rowan bellowed the order to press their advantage, to break Maeve's armada between them. Lorcan, a bit dazed, passed on the order to his own ships. Maeve wouldn't allow it. She'd wipe the Whitethorn line off the map for this. But there they were, unleashing their ice and wind upon their own ships, accented with arrows and harpoons that speared through wood and soldiers. Wind whipped at his hair, and he knew Whitethorn was now pushing his magic to the breaking point to haul their own ships into the fray before his cousins lost the advantage of surprise. Fools. All of them. Fools, and yet. Gavriel's son was bellowing Whitethorn's name. A goddamned victory cry. Over and over the men taking up the call. Then Fenris's voice lifted, and Gavriel's, and that red-haired queen, the Havilliard king. Their armada soared for Maeve's, sun and sea and sails all around, blades glinting in the morning brightness. Even the rise and fall of the oars seemed to echo the chant. On into battle, on into bloodshed, they called the prince's name. For a heartbeat, Lorcan allowed himself to ponder it, the power of the thing that had compelled Rowan to risk it all. And Lorcan wondered if it would perhaps be the one force that Maeve, that Erewhon, would not see coming. But Maeve, Maeve was in that armada somewhere. She would retaliate. She would strike back, make them all suffer. Rowan slammed their armada into Maeve's front lines, unleashing the fury of his ice and wind alongside their arrows. And where Rowan's power paused, Dorian's magic leaped out. Not a chance in hell of winning had now become a fool's chance. If Whitethorn and the others could hold their lines, keep themselves steady. Lorcan found himself scanning for Fenris and Gavriel across ship and soldier. And he knew Maeve's answer had come when he spied them, one after the other, go rigid. Spied Fenris take a running leap and vanish into thin air. The White Wolf of Dorinel instantly appeared at Gabriel's side, men shouting at his appearance out of a pocket of nothing. But he gripped Gabriel's arm, and then they were both gone again, their faces taut. Only Gabriel managed to look toward Lorcan before they vanished, his eyes wide with warning. Gabriel pointed, then they were nothing but sunlight and spindrift. Lorcan stared at where Gabriel had managed to point, that bit of defiance that had likely cut deep. Lorcan's blood went cold. Maeve was allowing the battle to explode across the water, because she had other games afoot. Because she was not on the seas at all, but on the shore. Gabriel had pointed to it. Not to the distant beach, but up the shore. Westward, precisely where he had left Elide hours ago. And Lorcan did not care about the battle, about what he'd agreed to do for Whitethorn, the promise he'd made the prince. He had made a promise to her first. The soldiers weren't stupid enough to try to stop him, as Lorcan ordered one of them in charge and seized a longboat. Elide couldn't view the battle from where she waited among the sand dunes, the seagrasses hissing around her. But she could hear it, the shouting and the booming. She tried not to listen to the din of battle, tried to instead beg Aneth to give her friends guidance, to keep Lorcan alive and Maeve far from him. But Aneth was sticking close, hovering behind her shoulder. "See," she said. As she always did. See, see, see. There was nothing but sand and grass and water and blue sky. Nothing but the 8 guards Lorcan had commanded to stay with her, lounging on the dunes, looking either relieved or put out to miss the battle raging on the waves around the bend in the coast. The voice became urgent. See, see, see. Then Aneth vanished entirely. No. Fled. Clouds gathered, sweeping from the marshes, heading toward the sun beginning its ascent. Elide got to her feet, sliding a bit on the steep dune. The wind whipped and hissed through the grasses, and warm sand turned gray and muted as those clouds passed over the sun, blotting it out. Something was coming. Something that knew Aelin Galathinius drew strength from sunlight, from Mala. Elide's mouth dried. If Vernon found her here, there would be no escaping him now. The guards on the dunes behind her stirred, noticing the strange wind, the clouds, sensing that approaching storm was not of natural origin. Would they stand against the Ilkin long enough for help to come? Or would Vernon bring more of them this time? But it was not Vernon who appeared on the beach, as if walking out of a passing breeze. Chapter 68. It was an agony. An agony to see Nehemia young and strong and wise. Speaking to Elena in the marshes, among those same ruins. And then there was the other agony, that Elena and Nehemia had known each other, worked together, that Elena had laid these plans 1,000 years ago, that Nehemia had gone to Rifthold knowing she'd die, knowing she'd need to break Aelin, use her death to break her, so she could walk away from the assassin and ascend her throne. Aelin and Manon were shown another scene, of a whispered conversation at midnight, deep beneath the glass castle. A queen and a princess meeting in secret, as they had for months. The queen asking the princess to pay that price she'd offered back in the marshes, to arrange for her own death, to set this all in motion. Nehemia had warned Elena that she, that Aelin, would be broken. Worse, that she would go so far into an abyss of rage and despair that she wouldn't be able to get out. Not as Selena. Nehemia had been right. Aelin was shaking, shaking in her half-invisible body. Shaking so badly she thought her skin would ripple off her bones. Manon stepped closer, perhaps the only comfort the witch knew how to offer. Solidarity. They stared into the swirling mist again, where the scenes, the memories, had unfolded. Aelin wasn't sure she could stomach another truth, another revelation of just how thoroughly Elena had sold her and Dorian to the gods, for the fool's mistake she'd made, not understanding the lock's true purpose, to seal Erewhon in his tomb rather than let Brennan finally end it, and send the gods to wherever they called home, dragging Erewhon with them. Send them home, using the keys to open the word gate, and a new lock to seal it forever. Nameless is my price. Using her power, drained to the last drop, her life to forge that new lock. To wield the power of the keys only once, just once, to banish them all, and then seal the gate forever. Memories flickered by. Elena and Brannon, screaming at each other in a room Aelin had not seen for 10 years. The king's suite in the palace at Orinth. Her suite. Or it would have been. A necklace glittered at Elena's throat. The eye. The first and now broken lock that Elena, now the Queen of Otterlin, seemed to wear as some sort of reminder of her foolishness, her promise to those furious gods. Her argument with her father raged and raged until the princess walked out. And Aelin knew Elena had never returned to that shining palace in the north. Then the reveal of that witch mirror in some nondescript stone chamber. A black-haired beauty with a crown of stars standing before Elena and Gavin, explaining how the witch mirror worked, how it would contain these memories. Rhiannon Crokken. Manon stared at the sight of her, and Aelin glanced between them. The face. It was the same. Manon's face. And Rhiannon Crokken's, the last Crokken queens of 2 separate eras. Then an image of Brannon alone, head in his hands, weeping before a shrouded body atop a stone altar. A crone's bent shape lay beneath. Elena. Her immortal grace yielded in order to live out a human lifespan with Gavin. Brannon still looked no older than 30. Brannon, the heat of 1,000 forges shining on his red-gold hair, his teeth bared in a snarl as he pounded a metal disc on an anvil, the muscles of his back rippling beneath golden skin as he struck and struck and struck, as he forged the amulet of Orinth, as he placed a sliver of black stone within either side, then sealed it, defiance written in every line of his body. Then wrote the message in word marks on the back. One message. For her. For his true heir, should Elena's punishment and promise to the gods hold true, the punishment and promise that had cleaved them, that Brannan could not and would not accept, not while he had strength left. "Nameless is my price," written right there, in word marks. The one who bore Brannan's mark, the mark of the bastard born nameless. She would be the cost to end this. The message on the back of the amulet of Orinth was the only warning he could offer, the only apology for what his daughter had done, even as it contained a secret inside so deadly no one must know, no one could ever be told. But there would be clues, for her, to finish what they'd started. Brannan built Elena's tomb with his own hands, carved the messages in there for Aelin, too. The riddles and the clues. The best he could offer to explain the truth, while keeping those keys hidden from the world, from powers who would use them to rule, to destroy. Then he made Mort, the medal for the door knocker gifted by Rhiannon Crokken, who brushed a hand over the king's cheek before she left the tomb. Rhiannon was not present. When Brannan hid the sliver of black stone beneath the jewel in Elena's crown, the second word key. Or when he set Damaris in its stand, near the second sarcophagus, for the mortal king he hated and had barely tolerated, but he had leashed that loathing for his daughter's sake, even if Gavin had taken his daughter, the daughter of his soul, away from him. The final key. He went to Mala's temple. It was where he had wanted to end this all along, anyway. The molten fire around the temple was a song in his blood, a beckoning, a welcoming. Only those with his gifts, her gifts, could get there. Even the priestesses could not reach the island in the heart of the molten river. Only his heir would be able to do that, or whoever held another key. So he set the remaining key under a flagstone, and then he walked into that molten river, into the burning heart of his beloved. And Brannan, King of Terrasen, Lord of Fire, did not emerge again. Aelin didn't know why it surprised her to be able to cry in this body, that this body had tears to spill. But Aelin shed them for Brannan, who knew what Elena had promised the gods, and had raged against it, the passing of this burden onto one of his descendants. Brannan had done what he could for her, to soften the blow of that promise, if he could not change its course wholly, to give Aelin a fighting chance. Nameless is my price. "I don't understand what this means," Manon said quietly. Aelin did not have the words to tell her. She had not been able to tell Rowan. But then Elena appeared, real as they were real, and stared into the fading golden light of Mala's temple as the memory vanished.
"I'm sorry,"
she said to Aelin. Manon stiffened at Elena's approach, taking a step from Aelin's side.
"It was the only way,"
Elena offered. That was genuine pain in her eyes. Regret.
"Was it a choice? Or just to spare Gavin's precious bloodline that I was the one who was selected?"
The voice that came from Aelin's throat was raw, vicious.
"Why spill Havilyard blood, after all, when you could fall back on old habits and choose another to bear the burden?"
Elena flinched.
"Dorian was not ready. You were. The choice Nehemia and I made was to ensure that things went according to plan."
"According to plan," Aelin breathed. "According to all your schemes to make me clean up the mess of what you started with your goddamned thieving and cowardice?"
"They wanted me to suffer," Elena said. "And I have. Knowing you must do this, bear this burden, it has been a steady, endless shredding of my soul for 1,000 years.
It was so easy to say yes, to imagine you would be a stranger, someone who would not need to know the truth, only to be in the right place with the right gift. And yet I was wrong. I was so wrong.
Elena lifted her hands before her, palms up.
I thought Erewhon would rise and the world would face him. I did not know. I did not know darkness would fall. I did not know that your land would suffer. Suffer as I tried to keep mine from suffering. And there were so many voices. So many voices even before Otterlin conquered. It was those voices that woke me. The voices of those wishing for an answer. For help.
Elena's eyes slid to Manon, then back to hers.
They were from all kingdoms, all races. Human, witch kind, fey. But they wove a tapestry of dreams, all begging for that one thing. A better world. Then you were born. And you were an answer to the gathering darkness with that flame. My father's flame, my mother's might, reborn at last. And you were strong, Aelin. So strong and so vulnerable. Not to outside threats, but the threat of your own heart, the isolation of your power. But there were those who knew you for what you were, what you could offer. Your parents, their court, your great-uncle, and Adian. Adian knew you were the queen who was promised without knowing what it meant, without knowing anything about you or me, or what I did to spare my own people.
The words hit her like stones.
The queen who was promised, Aelin said. But not to the world. To the gods. To the keys.
To pay the price. To be their sacrifice in order to seal the keys in the gate at last. Deanna's appearance hadn't been only to tell her how to use the mirror, but to remind her that she belonged to them, had a debt owed to them. Aelin said too quietly,
I didn't survive that night in the Florian River because of pure luck, did I?
Elena shook her head.
We did not—
No, Aelin snapped. Show me. Elena's throat bobbed. But then the mists turned dark and colored, and the very air around them became laced with frost. Breaking branches, ragged breath punctuated with gasping sobs, light footsteps crashing through bramble and brush, a horse's thunderous gait closing in. Aelin made herself stand still when that familiar, frozen wood appeared, exactly as she remembered it. As she appeared, so small and young, white nightgown torn and muddy, hair wild, eyes bright with terror and grief so profound it had broken her entirely, frantic to reach the roaring river beyond, the bridge. There were the posts, and the forest on the other side. Her sanctuary. Manon swore softly as Elena Galathinius flung herself through the bridge posts, realized the bridge had been cut, and plummeted into the raging, half-frozen river below. She had forgotten how far that fall was, how violent the black river was, the white rapids illuminated by the icy moon overhead. The image shifted, and then it was dark. And silent, and they were being tumbled over and over as the river tossed her in its wrath.
There was so much death,
Elena whispered, as they watched Aelin being thrown and twisted and dragged down by the river. The cold was crushing.
So much death, and so many lights extinguished,
Elena said, voice breaking.
You were so small. And you fought so hard.
And there she was, clawing at the water, kicking and thrashing,
trying to get to the surface, to the air. And she could feel her lungs begin to seize, feel the pressure building. Then the light flickered from the amulet of Orinth hanging around her neck, greenish symbols fizzing like bubbles around her. Elena slid to her knees, watching that amulet glow beneath the water.
They wanted me to take you right then.
You had the amulet of Orinth. Everyone thought you were dead. And the enemy was distracted with the slaughter. I could take you, help you track down the other two keys. I was allowed to help you, to do that much. And once we got the other two, I was to force you to forge the lock anew, to use every last drop of you to make that lock, summon the gate, put the keys back into it, send them home and end it all. You had enough power, even then. It'd kill you to do it, but you were likely dead anyway. So they let me form a body to get you.
Elena took a shuddering breath as a figure plunged into the water. A silver-haired, beautiful woman in an ancient dress. She grabbed Aelin around the waist, hauling her up, up, up. They hit the surface of the river, and it was dark and loud and wild, and it was all she could do to grab the log Elena shoved her onto, to dig her nails into the soaked wood and cling to it while she was carried downriver, deep into the night.
I hesitated.
Elena breathed.
You clung to that log with all your strength. Everything had been taken from you. Everything. And yet you still fought. You did not yield. And they told me to hurry because even then their power to hold me in that solid body was fading. They said to just take you and go, but I hesitated. I waited until you got to that riverbank.
Mud and reeds and trees looming overhead, snow still patching the steep hill of the bank.
Aelin watched herself crawl up that riverbank, inch by painful inch, and she felt the phantom icy mud beneath her nails, felt her broken, frozen body as it slumped onto the earth and shuddered, over and over. As lethal cold gripped her, while Elena hauled herself onto the bank beside her. As Elena lunged for her, screaming her name, cold and shock setting in.
I thought the danger would be drowning,
Elena whispered.
I didn't realize being out in the cold for so long.
Her lips had gone blue.
Aelin watched her own small chest rise, fall, rise, then stop moving altogether.
You died,
Elena whispered.
Right there, you died. You had fought so hard, and I failed you. And in that moment, I didn't care that I'd again failed the gods, or my promise to make it right, or any of it. All I could think...
Tears ran down Elena's face.
All I could think was how unfair it was. You had not even lived. You had not even been given a chance, and all those people who had wished and waited for a better world. You would not be there to give it to them.
Oh, gods.
Elena,
Aelin breathed. The Queen of Otterland sobbed into her hands, even as her former self shook Aelin over and over, trying to wake her. Trying to revive the small body that had given out. Elena's voice broke.
I could not allow it. I could not endure it, not for the gods' sake, but for your own.
Light flared at Elena's hand, then down her arm, then along her whole body.
Fire. She wrapped herself around Aelin, the heat melting the snow around them. Drying her ice-crusted hair. Lips that were blue turned pink, and a chest that had stopped breathing now lifted. Darkness faded to the gray light of dawn.
And then, I defied them.
Elena set her down between the reeds and rose, scanning the river, the world.
I knew who had an estate near this river.